Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
But let's start this morning on the road, or this evening, or whenever it is your time of the day. If you've ever dreamed of hitting the open road, if you've ever thought about exploring Australia's coastlines, the rugged outback, everything in between, I think you're in for a bit of a treat this hour. Now, caravanning, it's more than a holiday for many people. It can be a lifestyle that's booming across the country. You can have families looking for affordable adventures to retirees embracing the freedom of life outside of work. Caravanning offers something for everyone. And today, we're joined by someone who knows this world inside out. Marty Ledwich runs the Caravan and Camping Australia Facebook group. It is huge. It has hundreds of thousands of members. It is a thriving online community where people come together. They share tips, stories, advice, and Marty himself, obviously a caravanning aficionado, has spent decades doing it. Marty here, chuckling there, but welcome to Nightlife.
G'day, Nick. How are you going?
I'm really well. I should say, love to hear from people. If you've got anything in terms of questions, if you've got some ideas, Anton already saying back in 1968, we went across the Nullarbor with a caravanette, several hundred miles of dirt roads. It was a huge amount of fun. Lines are open. Text lines open. 1-300-800-222 or, and you know the text line, 0467-922-702. Marty, a bit of your history maybe. When did you first strap on the caravan to the back of the car and start going?
Oh, goodness. Myself, have been travelling around Australia for probably the best part of 25, 30-odd years. I got addicted by a mate of mine who took me actually four-wheel driving up to Craig's Hut in the Victorian Alps.
Wow.
And it kind of spawned from there, travelled around in an old beaten-up camper trailer for probably, oh, I don't know, 5, 6 years, 7 years, something like that. Got a new camper trailer, and then my wife turned to me one day and she said, I've had enough of canvas. She said, I want a caravan. I said, you've got to be joking. We're a bit too young for this. And anyway, we went looking, and before I knew it, I thought to myself, actually, you know what? This leaves camper trailers well and truly in the dust, and we've been doing it ever since.
So, hang on, even back then you were thinking, hang on, caravanning's only for older people.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think I was probably about, I don't know, 40-something or other, 45, something like that, and I honestly didn't think I was old.
Whippersnapper.
Yeah, I know, tell me about it. And I honestly didn't think I was old enough for it. I thought, no, I'm not ready for that. I still want to do the off-road stuff and I still want to do the adventurous stuff and everything. But in the end, when I sort of looked at the caravans, I looked at how much was in them and how capable they were and how comfortable, and I was blown away, and yeah, now we would never go back.
Marty, had you been a part of your childhood at all? Had you done any of it back then?
Not caravanning per se. My dad and I did a lot of travelling together. We did a lot of camping, hiking, bushwalking. So we didn't have a caravan at the time, but Dad and I have since done trips. When I've had the camper trailer, you know, we did a trip with some mates up to Cape York in 99 and, you know, it was a big boys week, you know, boys 4 weeks away, and, you know, we got very dirty, very muddy and everything. So, it's been a part of our lives for, you know, for a very long time.
All right, 1-300-800-222 questions for Marty, comments, your own tips and tricks as well. When you made that jump, camper trailer, no thank you, canvas, bye-bye, we want to travel in a bit more comfort, What was on your mind when you were looking for a caravan? Was it just all the features within a certain budget, or was there stuff you knew you wanted attached to it?
You know what? It was interesting because I think at the time when I think about it, I was probably still in the camper trailer mindset. So I was looking at a lot of the stuff that I guess made a camper trailer a good, you know, sort of proposition. I was trying to feed a bit of that into the caravan a bit, but we were also, like my wife, she insisted on having a shower and a toilet. I thought to myself, you've got to be kidding. But, you know, so we had to factor that in. We needed a decent enough bed and all this sort of stuff. And so we ended up getting this caravan. It was about 17 foot long, had a lot of stuff in it, very, very, very capable off-road thing, so you could pull it just about anywhere. And it was fantastic. But I think we learned a lot of lessons from that first time that we, you know, didn't necessarily think about at the time. So, I mean, I usually say to people, there's a big difference between the caravan you take away for a couple of weeks every year to, you know, down Sorrento Beach.
Well, yeah.
To the caravan you're actually going to live in. A massive difference. And you start to think about a lot of different things.
Did it change the way you travelled when you made that move into a caravan?
Oh, completely.
Yeah?
Yeah, completely. I mean, look, you can't... I mean, I'm not going to say you can't take caravan into really remote areas, because you can, but, you know,
cautiously.
Very cautiously. But, I mean, you also, I guess you spend a lot more time, you know, in things like caravan parks. You're more community sort of based, you know, not so much isolated stuff, lots of people around, that sort of thing. You can get very isolated, and we've done that in the past, but I think rather than being in that really sort of, I want to find a spot that nobody's around, you end up being in many spots where there's probably a few people around, and you know, you're all pretty like-minded.
Were there, I don't know, maybe mistakes or things you had to learn the hard way when you were
You nodding? Yeah, absolutely.
What sort of stuff?
Oh, look, the biggest thing is storage, I think. One of the things that you really don't realise, and this is particularly true if you're living in a caravan, is just how much, not so much how much storage you need, but the sort of storage you need. Like, for argument's sake, you can't pack big things anymore, right? You've got to find space for, you know, and you've got to make things that are little, do the job sort of stuff. You know, if you're going to be away from civilization for a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, 4 weeks or whatever, you've got to be able to carry enough food, enough water, enough power. You know, you've got to be able to live still too as well, you know. And look, for some people, they can get away with very little. But I think once you sort of get used to having all the mod cons, then you start thinking things very differently.
So a couple of those first trips, maybe not the comfort level you would have wanted later on. You were kind of like, oh, hang on, we'll pack double of that next time.
Yeah, probably. I think, like for argument's sake, I think when we actually made the decision to live on the road and we left, you know, we had all these ideas in our head that, you know, we were going to do this, we're going to do that, we need this, we need that. And I think probably within the first 6 months, I was leaving stuff behind at the, you know, with the caravan park, you know, common room sort of
really?
Thing. You know?
Did that yeah, happen? With a
free to good home sort of thing, you know.
So how long did that first 17-footer last you?
We had it for about 2 years, I think.
Okay.
Because we bought it before we decided to sell up and live on the road.
Yeah, right. So he was still for trips.
Yeah, it was more for, you know, we were both working full time. You know, you get 3 weeks off a year, whatever it is, 4 weeks off a year. So that was the sort of holidays we were doing. But then when we sort of decided, look, we're going to live on the road, we looked at it and thought, this is just not going to work. It's way too small. All the storage was under the bed. So if you wanted to get things like your camp chairs and your tables and anything outside, it was all under the bed. It's the only place you could put it. So you had to walk in every day, drag everything out and set up. And I just thought to myself, I can't.
You can't make that work.
You can't make that work.
So you knew about 2 years in, need to make the big change, got to get it across. When you went in to do that replacement, was it with a clearer checklist?
Yes, absolutely. Like, I mean, you really do learn a lot. It's interesting. We've got friends who are travelling at the moment, and I remember when they first left, they left in a pop-top caravan, so a little pop-top thing, and they were going to live in that.
You don't see as many of those on the road anymore.
Well, you do. There are around, but again, they're people who are, you know, doing the one trip every year thing, right? And they said they'd be quite comfortable. And I said to them, I said, you're lucky if you're going to live 2 weeks in this and you'll be wanting to get out of it. And sure enough, the first windstorm that they had, where this thing nearly got blown away, they couldn't get out of it quicker into a caravan.
Marty Ledwich is here, generously giving some of his expertise when it comes to caravanning. John's called in from Melton. John, welcome to Nightlife.
Yes, thank you. Look, I was just going to ask the question, do you think that caravanning post-COVID is becoming rather elitist? We're heading down to Port Fairy with the family in Easter, and we're paying $160 a night for a powered site. And with the cost of caravans, you really don't get much for a new caravan under $100,000 these days.
What do you think, Marty? Because it did change quite a lot during COVID. I remember doing chats with people about just you couldn't get a caravan for love nor money for a while there. And when you did, the resale was huge on it.
Yeah, look, things have changed. The caravan market went absolutely bananas post-COVID.
Yeah.
And in fact, we were in Western Australia at the time, and I can remember the explosion that happened when it all opened up. I couldn't believe it. And look, I guess with that, you know, you've got increased demand, more supply, there's, you know, prices have gone up, COVID's put prices up of everything. So, and a lot of these caravan parks, especially in high tourist places like Port Fairy, you know, they make hay while the sun shines, you know. And a lot of people argue about it. They say it's a bit, you know, it's gouging and all this sort of stuff. But by the same token, I think, well, you know, these people have got to make a living. They've got to pay insurance. Wages are going up, all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, look, I don't know if I'd call it elitist, but I would say that it is more expensive than it ever used to be. But by the same token, you think about it, the caravan of today is unrecognisable compared to what we used to travel around
in. Compared to Anton's 1968 caravanette, at a rough guess.
Correct, you know, which is the year I was born, quite honestly, which was odd. But, yeah, look, I think it's definitely become more expensive.
Yeah.
There's no question of that. But, you know, look, you can find, you don't necessarily have to stay in somewhere like Port Ferry. You know, there's probably little towns either side that aren't quite as popular, and they'll probably have a good caravan park, and they may not have all the amenities, and they'll probably charge you half the price.
Yeah, and John, obviously you're going for family as well, but have you seen, is the price different if you weren't going around that Easter weekend? Have you had a chance to take a look?
I'm sure there is a big difference. That's peak season. Yeah, Easter is peak season. But, you know, pre-COVID, we were average powered power site would be about $35.
Oh.
And even off season now, you're talking, you know, $60, $70 in even inland caravan parks.
Do you get out often, John?
Not as often as I'd want. But,
you enjoy it? Yeah, you like the caravan
absolutely.
Life?
Absolutely. Oh, I love it. Yeah, we just bought a three-year-old masterpiece caravan and haven't had a chance to use it much yet because we just had a bit of a chaotic life this year, one thing after another, but looking forward to getting away in January.
Mate, good on you for getting out there, and I hope you have a really good trip on that one. It's interesting, Marty, because, you know, I think it feels like there's been a bit of a boom in caravanning as, I guess, other forms of travel got more expensive, significantly more expensive. Obviously, you know, as John was just pointing out, it's not necessarily wildly cheap to go caravanning these days.
No.
But it's not just about the affordability of it, is it, that's making it appealing? You know, you've got a love for it that goes beyond just the fact it's cheaper than a flight to Europe.
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, for me, I look at the value of, like, say, something like, say, a caravan park, for argument's sake, a lot differently. Like, at the moment, we're back home at the moment. We're renting. It's costing us, you know, what is it, $600, $700 a week or whatever to rent a house. I've got to mow the lawns. I've got to look, you know, we've got to vacuum the place and everything else. You go into a caravan park, you might pay $40, $50 a night, but someone mows your lawn, someone cleans your swimming pool, someone cleans your toilets. You know, you get all the power and electricity and water you can use. I don't know. Look, I mean, value is perceived differently these days, I think.
Yeah, it is. And some of it's, you know, I think you can put a value on experience as well.
True.
You can't, you know, put a money sign on it, but you can put a great deal of personal value to the experience of those trips.
Oh, absolutely. And look, there are some, I mean, Port Ferry, I don't want to pick on Port Ferry because, you know, I mean, it sounds like we're sort of sectioning
it out. It's a beautiful town, but we're not trying to pick on Port Ferry.
No, but I mean, it is an iconic town. It's on the Great Ocean Road. If you've ever been to the Port Ferry Folk Festival.
Fantastic. Some of the best music. It's huge.
It's sensational. But, you know, I mean, it is a bit of a focal point now. So you're going to pay more for a place like that. But if you were to, say, go to, I mean, you know, anywhere sort of north, you know, somewhere like, say, Tokemwal, would be a hell of a lot cheaper to stay in a caravan park in Tokemwal than it might be to stay in a caravan park in Swan Hill, for argument's sake. Simply because it's just not as popular a town as, you know, as some of these other places. So, I mean, there are alternatives, you know, and you can get a pretty good experience at the same time.
Questions, calls, tips, tricks, get them all into me. 1-300-800-222. Give me a call. My name is Nick Healy. I've got to say that a lot because you've only met me once before. Marty Ledridge is a wonderful guest coming in talking about caravanning and everything in between. Texting me 0467-922-702. Marty Michael on the text line says, I'm kind of curious why pickup truck or ute campers are far less common in Australia than the US and whether Marty expects them to get more popular here. I think, do you mean the Winnebago style, do you think?
I think what he's talking about is in the US, I mean, there's a big pickup culture over there. Now, here we call them dual cab utes.
Yeah.
In the US, they're called pickup trucks. And the United States pickup trucks are massively bigger than the ones we've got here. And so what they do is they put these pods on the back.
Ah.
And they're a fully self-contained pod, and you can actually, in some of them, they call them leave behinds. So you can actually put little legs on them, and that drops the, you can drop off the pod and then go out in the, you know, the ute and whatever, and travel around. Here, they're probably not as popular because our dual cab utes are just smaller and it's not as practical. I mean, you do see them. In fact, we were up at Greens Lake up near Rochester a few weekends ago, and there was about three or four of them, obviously all travelling together. I can't remember the brand of it, but they are a thing. But I don't want to be controversial here, but I think the days of the big utes are numbered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you do the math, we've got to be zero carbon by 2050 or whatever it is. 2050 is only 27 years away.
It is.
Or whatever number it is. So it's not very far. Now, you buy a brand new car these days. Let's say you buy an American pickup truck. It's going to cost you $150,000, nearly $200,000.
Yes.
You would ideally want to keep that for, 15, 20 years.
Easily when you're spending that money, surely.
That's right. But the thing is, somewhere in the next 10 years, there's going to be a crossover point where it's just not going to be affordable to run a vehicle like that, and you probably are not going to be able to sell it because everyone's buying hybrids and electric vehicles. Now, I know electric vehicles are not popular with everybody in the caravanning world at the moment, and that's understandable, but I can tell you now, I think 5-10 years from now, it's going to be a big, big different market. We're on the cusp of a revolution, I think.
So, following on from where I was asking, why do you think the self-contained, the Winnebago style, I know they've probably got a better name, a camper van or an RV.
Motorhome.
Why isn't that more popular in Australia? Because that just seems almost perfect for our roads and our distances.
Well, it's interesting you say that. They are very popular.
Okay.
They're very popular, I guess, with the grey nomads. And also a lot of people coming over here from Europe will hire them. So you see a lot of the... I think Brits, Maui, there's a couple of other brands. You see them everywhere. Once you get out of Melbourne, and start getting into the sort of outback, you see them everywhere. So they are quite popular. But in terms of suitability for our roads, I've driven one and I wasn't that impressed with it, to be honest. I actually found it noisy. I found it uncomfortable. I found, because a lot of them are based on commercial vehicles. They're not for me.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they're not.
Not for anybody else. But, if you've been driving around in a 200-series Land Cruiser all your life, you're going to get into a motorhome and think, oh, my God, this thing's rough as guts. But if you've been driving, the old 60-series around like my father-in-law has been doing for the last, 50 years, he'll probably get into one of those motorhomes and think, oh, this is the most luxurious thing I've ever driven in. So it's all about perspective.
It is about half past the hour. We're speaking with Marty Ledwidge, and he'll be back in just a second.
Listen. Behind them was the dark forest.
Classic books.
My name is Ketanya Maynard and I am reading The Wizard of Oz.
Brought back to life through the voices of a new generation. Search for ABC Timeless Audiobooks, only on ABC Listen.
You're on Nightlife. My name's Nick Healy. If you have any questions, tips, stories to share regarding caravanning, Marty is he runs the Caravan and Camping Australia Facebook group. They have a couple of 100,000 members, I think you were just saying.
Nearly 260.
Huge, absolutely huge. 1-300-800-222 is the number to call, or on that text line, it is 0467-922-702. Question that's come in here from Lee in Canberra. Muddy, what are your thoughts on a composting toilet versus a chemical toilet?
Oh, you know what? This is probably one of the most questions that comes up on the group. Often.
Yeah.
It's a big thing.
Well, it'd be a big part of comfort, surely, as well. How often are you having to empty it? What are you doing? All that sort of stuff.
And look, I'm not gonna deny emptying the cartridge out of the toilet, especially if you've been using it for everything it's supposed to be used for. It's not a pleasant experience.
Okay.
But look, I've looked at the composting toilets. I know people who have got them and swear by them.
Mm.
Look, they're not suitable for everybody, and I think it's important for people to do their research and find out the truth about how they're used. Like, two people can't necessarily do everything in a composting toilet on a daily basis without it needing some sort of maintenance. So you might think you're getting away from the whole emptying the cartridge,
but
you may be having to deal with other stuff as well. So it's – look, I can't say that I've researched it intensely, but I've seen enough of it to think to myself, well, I think you're just really going from the, from the frying pan into the...
What's the downside of the chemical toilets? You need special places to dispose and empty them, is that right?
Yeah, you've got to dispose them in dump points. Right, there's dump points all around the country. And look, there's very, very, very few times when there isn't a dump point around. They're almost everywhere.
Yeah.
The issue is that obviously the cartridge can only hold so much. And, you know, if you're remote camping or something like that, you might fill it up, you know, in a week, and you probably another week before you're getting into civilization. We always carry a spare cartridge.
Okay.
And we've found that, you know, sort of managing that, finding public toilets around every so often sort of thing, you know, you can get by. But look, I just say people do their research, you know, and look into it. YouTube is a fabulous resource, and you'll get people's honest opinions.
The delicate reality of the toilet in your caravanning situation.
I was wondering when the question would come up, actually.
It was going to come up, Marty. It was 100% going to come up. Lovely little text in from Dobrilla in Surrey Hills saying, in my late teens in the 1960s, I couldn't afford a caravan, so I bought a Mazda 1000 Bongo van, decked it out with a mattress and a camp stove, and then spent every long weekend and public holiday checking out New South Wales. Yep. And the Victoria Goldfields, good times. Yep. And this is the difference we were talking about before. Are you buying something that's for a trip here and there,
yep,
or are you going to be spending weeks? Are you going to be almost living in,
yep,
it? And they're very different usage.
It's extremely
scenarios.
Different. It's so different. And I think this is something we found. And I used to say to people, look, you know, if you're intending on living in a caravan, go and sit in as many of them as you can and imagine what your day is like. So, you know, you get up in the morning, you're going to make yourself a cup of coffee, you make yourself some breakfast, you know, you've got to, you know, do your washing up, clean yourself, have a shower. And also think about, and then you think, you know, okay, well, we may not necessarily be going out sightseeing or anything today. It's raining. It's going to be raining for 3 days. Can you sit in the van for 3 days and not get in each other's way? Some people say to us, one of the biggest question we get asked is, how come you and your wife never killed each other living in a, you know, 20-foot caravan? And, I mean, quite honestly, we had a better relationship in the caravan than we ever did in the house.
Right.
You know, just because I think we just found it, I guess, it suited us.
You were doing stuff together as well, which is lovely.
We did, but we also had our own things to do.
Yeah, good.
You know, and I think this is another thing I say to people because, you know, look, it is difficult getting on in each other with, you know, and you're locked into that little room. So it's important to have your own things to do. Like, I like metal detecting. I'm a photographer. I also write for some caravanning magazines. So I'm with the crowd called Go RV at the moment, and I'm writing for them at the moment. So that takes my time. My wife, she liked diamond dotting. She liked crocheting. We like going for walks. We had the dogs, so we used to take dogs for a walk. It's important to have things to do, and it's important to have things that you do that perhaps your partner doesn't do.
On that note, Margaret texting in saying, we are permanently on the road from our home on the Gold Coast. Mm. I haven't made it down to Victoria yet, but there are so many places like showgrounds that will host at a much lower rate than more formal caravan parks.
That's correct.
And Margaret says, we travel off-road in a 20-foot caravan and we can live off-grid for 2 weeks. We did it at Menindee Lakes, a bit south of Broken Hill. We love our life.
Yep, it's fabulous. And in fact, one of the things that we get a big kick out of is that what they call free camping, so that off-grid camping thing.
Uh-huh.
If you set yourself up to do that, honestly, there are some amazing places to see. It's extraordinary.
You can get calls, you can get texts, you can have questions with me, you can share some stories to Marty and I. 1-300-800-222. We probably need to talk about the towing side of it. And I know we touched on sort of how big a car needs to be and other bits and pieces, but how do you know if your car is up to the job? What are you looking at?
You know what? It's interesting because a bit of a situation like the, you know, the chicken or the egg, right?
Mm.
And I would say to people, look, a lot of people go buy the car thinking, oh, yes, this, and they'll get sold saying this will tow anything up to 3.5 tonnes and all this sort of stuff. And then they'll go out and look at the vans, and by the time they've got everything hooked up, they'll find out that the car is just not capable of it. So my theory is you should look at the caravan first and then perhaps go looking at the car. And look, it's not complicated. I mean, you do need to check out things like, you know, the specifications of the car, GVM, GCM, which is gross vehicle mass, gross combined mass, you know, how much it weighs empty, and start to look at the stuff that you put into it. But, yeah, look, again, there are so many resources on the internet to actually explain you know, how to make these calculations so that you're not making a huge mistake. But a lot of people do find that out, and I mean, even we bought a 200 series Land Cruiser, we bought it brand new, we did the math on it, but even that needed a suspension upgrade to be able to tow the caravan that we wanted to tow and carry the load that we needed it to carry.
So it needed a bit of aftermarket work.
So it needed a fair bit of aftermarket work, they call GVM upgrade.
Yeah.
And look, it only gave us an extra, I think it was about an extra 350 kilos payload in the car, but that, like, I can't tell you how much of a difference that makes. Like, you to get that sort of weight back really does, you know, help extraordinarily, you know, a lot, you know.
Staying on that towing, Karen in Mullumbimby has texted saying, I think it should be compulsory for everyone who wants to tow a caravan to have to do a driving course.
Yes.
Karen says, I've driven all over the country from Meekatharra to the Mornington Peninsula, from Perth to Cooktown. And caravan towers are the worst, wobbling all over the place, terrible parking, and they seem a little bit oblivious to others. It's a complaint you'll hear a lot, and I'm sure, you know, it's something that you've been kind of directed before.
Oh, yeah.
What do you say, Marty?
Look, this actually was trialled in England. Getting a towing license was actually trialled in England, I think it was about 10 years ago. Don't quote me on that.
Mm-hmm.
And they scrapped it after about 2 years. It didn't work. And I guess this is the problem, right? I think caravanners get a bad name. Probably to some degree, some of it is deserved, but I think it's like every other driver. I mean, you know, remember the old Volvo drivers? Now you can't tell me every Volvo driver on the road was a bad driver, right? It's like P-platers. Everybody complains about P-platers. Everybody complains about truck drivers.
Okay.
Everyone complains about everybody. At the end of the day, you get a license. It doesn't necessarily mean you can drive a car. You get a license doesn't necessarily mean you can drive a truck, right? So, look, I think there is value in some sort of an endorsement. So, like you say, okay, well, look, I want to tow. I'm going to go and do the course. And you get a license endorsement that says, yes, you've done the course. And that's a recognised thing. I think that's all right. But, look, at the end of the day, if you talk to the police about what their priorities are, it's all about speeding, drink driving, you know, distractions. They're the things that are killing people on the roads, and I'm not saying, you know, bad caravanners aren't killing themselves and other people. That does happen, and there's certainly been a bit of an increase with the increase of vehicles on the road.
Yeah.
But if you talk to the police, it's not a priority.
Marty, does that safety and just knowing how to drive well, does that come up a lot on the Facebook group?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, okay.
All the time. And look, it is an argument, but... And I guess at some point, you know, we may end up getting to that stage. But the thing is, we haven't even got national road rules that are consistent. You know, how the hell are we going to introduce, you know, a towing license system that is consistent across all the states and territories when we can't even get road rules? Like, I mean, for instance, a U-turn in Victoria is governed differently than it is everywhere else in Australia.
Very different.
Very different.
I discovered when I moved to Victoria 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, I discovered the bad news in Townsville, you know, doing an illegal U-turn that I thought was completely legal.
Yeah.
And when I explained to the police officer that I was from Victoria, he was having nothing of it. So, look, I mean, we can't even get that right. You know, people get licences at different ages across the country. How the hell are we going to license something, you know, brand new like caravan and get it consistent across the country? I mean, it's a great idea, and look, it might solve a few problems, but it's not going to cure everything.
Our expert tonight, Marty Ledwich, is generously sharing a whole hour of his time, taking questions, giving some tips and tricks. 1300 800 222 to give a call into Nightlife, have a chat to Marty and I, texting 0467 922 702. Kathy says, guys, in regard to costs at caravan parks, if your van has its own power, water, etc., heaps of places where you can free camp. I don't know a lot of caravanners that do this. Yep. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And for a solo woman traveller, says this texter, what do you think the pros and cons are of a camper versus a caravan and car? Tricky one, Marty.
That is a tricky one because, look, if you're towing, if you've got a reasonably, I suppose, small car, a small caravan, very easy to tow, very easy to manoeuvre and everything else, big caravan, big car, something goes wrong, you know, unless you're mechanically minded or something like that, I mean, you are going to experience a bit of an issue.
Mm.
But the problem with, I think, with, say, a motorhome or a, you know, like a camper or something like that, unless you've got a bike... You pull up to the caravan park, you set yourself up and everything else, put your chairs out and everything, sit there and say, yep, I'm ready to sit down, go to your fridge and go, shit, I forgot the milk. And it's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Are you going to go for a drive and pick up the milk and pack everything up and then come back again? So,
or are you going to pull the bike off the back, which is a lot of people do. Yeah. You see that, some very good bikes. Yeah.
And look, I say this to people. Look, I've travelled by myself. Yep. Before I got married again, I travelled around Australia, on my own. And look, there are so many people, if you get yourself into trouble, who are only too happy to help. There's a magic community out there.
Yeah.
And I've never been stuck for too long. I mean, and I've always, if I see somebody in strife, I've always, tried to stop and help whenever we can. Look, I think, and look, if you're feeling threatened or you're feeling scared or you're feeling vulnerable or whatever, look, honestly, just go and knock on somebody's door. A caravanning community is, it's not like living in, suburbia sort of thing.
It is a community, the way you're describing it. Yes. It tends to be a bit of a look after each other on the road,
yes,
does it?
Yes. Oh, absolutely, yes. Because I think we're all in it together. Oh,
yeah.
Look, the worst can happen to any of us at any time. I think to myself, well, look, if something did happen to me, I'd appreciate somebody stopping to give me a hand.
Of course you would.
And I think to myself, well, I can't expect that if I'm not prepared to do that myself.
When you were saying the bikes on the back, I'm always in awe of the big motorhomes or caravans that are also towing a smaller car for their emergencies. Mm-hmm. That is wild to me.
Look, it's actually a really normal thing.
Wow.
And it works out really well for a lot of people because it's, I guess in some respects, you're not necessarily reversing a big caravan into a site. You've only just got to unhitch the car, park it to the side, and then park the motorhome. So a lot of older couples do that. But it works out well for them. That's fine. It's just another option.
Lorraine says, my husband, Nick, has helped heaps of people park their caravans in caravan parks and even had to park for a few people. Mm-hmm. She says, caravanners maybe need to do some driving towing tests before heading off. If not tests, you want to practice a lot. It is a big deal to go to just driving normally to towing something that big.
Oh, it is. It is. It's a massive difference. And if you think about it, I mean, the licences in Victoria, at the very least, and I'm pretty sure this is pretty much standard across Australia, on a standard car licence, if your tow vehicle doesn't have a rated maximum towing capacity, you can tow a trailer up to 9 tonne.
That's
ridiculous, right? It's utterly ridiculous. Obviously, there's not very many vehicles on the market that haven't got a limit on towing, but if it doesn't have one, that's the law. So to think that you can even say 3.5 tonne with a 2.5 tonne tow vehicle, you're talking close to 7 tonnes. It's almost a small commercial truck sort of thing that you're driving, and a light truck over 4.5 tonne, you need a, or 4.9 tonne, you need a truck license.
Right.
So, when you think about it, there is a big jump.
When you made that jump from, your canvas top to the full caravan, was it a big adjustment for you? Did you get out and do a bit of practice runs, of parking and everything in between?
Look, to be honest, I was probably a little bit naive, I think. I was in the SES for 30-odd years and, they teach you how to drive.
They teach you how to drive big things.
Yeah, they teach you how to drive trucks. They teach you how to back trailers and all this sort of stuff. And I've been driving camper trailers for God knows how long. And I got into the, I remember hitching up the caravan and thinking, oh, yeah, this is a cinch. Well, I drove that drive home from, I think it was down in Springvale to Craigieburn at the time on the CityLink. I can tell you I was
not having a good time.
I wasn't enjoying myself at all. It was frightening.
Oh.
It was frightening. But look, I don't know how you can, I mean, look, there are plenty of courses people can do, and I highly recommend that if people are going into caravan for the first time, go and do a course. It's a really good way to learn. But I'm not sure that there's any better way to figure out, what it is actually like to tow a big caravan in city traffic than to actually just get out there and do it.
And actually make it happen.
And make it happen, because I don't know that anybody can actually give you that that sensation and that awareness without actually physically doing it.
You are on Nightlife. My name's Nick Healy. We're having a big chat about all things caravanning with Marty Ledwich. He's got about another 15 minutes with us, so plenty of time. If you've got questions, your own tips, any stories to share, 1-300-800-222. On the tip side of it, Marty, mm-hmm. I mean, are there the three must-have items that are going to make for a successful caravan trip? Oh,
goodness me. I was actually thinking about this on the way down here today, and look, I guess those three things would be different for everybody.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like for argument's sake, I don't know that I could travel anywhere without a coffee machine, right? A little Nespresso, my wife and I both very much enjoy a proper cup of coffee.
Yeah, okay.
And to be able to have a little Nespresso that's a small machine,
yep,
make a good cup of coffee, it's consistent every single time, is just an invaluable thing for us, right? But a lot of people are going to say, oh, my God, what do you need a coffee machine for, right? So, look, I think if you're going to pick three things, have a look at your lifestyle, see what's important, and pick those things. In terms of the accessories that I think people need, look,
yeah,
a handheld radio,
yep,
CB radio, that you can communicate with the driver of the tow vehicle with, is absolutely essential. It makes backing your trailer in so much better, and you're not, I mean, you'll see people flapping their hands around like birds, and, you know, nobody, and the husband's screaming, I can't see you, and everything else. So I think that's almost essential. Look, good towing mirrors are absolutely essential as well. In fact, while there's no legal requirement to fit towing mirrors, there is a legal requirement to have adequate vision. And towing mirrors are the only way you can do that. And it absolutely scares the daylights out of me how many people don't fit them.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It's actually a big thing. And I think probably the third thing is, look, just have good basic gear, like, you know, good drinking water hoses, good electrical cables, good quality stuff that is going to be reliable and works when you get to where you need it to go.
Right. And this is the interesting one, because there's so much high-tech stuff you can pack in now, from solar panels to satellite internet to everything in between, if that's what you want.
Oh.
It's not exactly off-grid, but whether the satellite internet would be the argument on that one, but it's interesting.
Oh, look, the technology has changed dramatically. And look, Starlink, I mean, I know a lot of people not very happy with, you know, Elon and everything else, but you cannot deny what the guy and his company have created as far as remote internet connectivity. It leaves mobile broadband for dead.
Wow.
And in fact, it's shameful that in this country we cannot build a reliable internet, you know, technology. It's got to come from overseas, from somebody like, you know, from Starlink. And that literally changes the game for everybody.
Marty, I've got Scott on the line from Mooney Mooney. Scott, yep, welcome to Nightlife.
Hello, thank you.
What do you want to say?
Well, I would just like to say, like, nobody indicates anymore, like, or waves anymore, like, as a respect thing.
Oh, just giving you a little kind of thanks for letting us through. No one's giving you that kind of, like, nod of appreciation?
Well, yeah, wave out the window or wave in your rearview mirror, you know, like, as a respect thing. Like, I heard in Europe, you know, they love push bikers. over here, we hate them. And then I don't.
As a push biker, I'm glad that you don't hate us, Scott. It's true. It's true, though. I think sometimes, you know, there used to be a lot more of a, you know, that friendly wave, you know, just a nod, a bit of respect, thanks for doing that. Has Scott got a point? Do you see less of it on the road, Marty?
No, to be honest. I've actually noticed. Look, very much so within, you know, sort of the eastern seaboard, around the big cities and everything else, very, very, very rare to see that sort of, you know, camaraderie sort of thing. But the minute, say, for argument's sake, you start heading up the Stuart Highway, that changes completely. Mm. Everybody waves at everybody. And in fact, sometimes after a while, you sort of get a bit sick to death of waving and everything. Oh, my God, here we go again, you know. But no, I've actually found people to be, the further out you are from the major cities, the much, much more friendlier and acknowledging people are.
Peter's on the line. He's in St George in Queensland. Peter, what did you want to say about caravanning, mate?
I've travelled behind quite a few.
Right.
I know quite a few people that have caravans and don't know how to pack them.
Mm.
They're either too heavy over the tow bar or they're too light over the back.
Yep.
Marty's nodding along, yeah.
Yep.
You were talking about having a course and doing something about it, mm-hmm. if you could. That would be a really good way to do it.
Yep.
Or something to think about.
Yep, no, I definitely agree. A lot of people don't know how to pack their caravans
and
properly.
And so the weight distribution's all wrong, yes, so it's sitting wrong, travelling wrong.
Yeah, and look, a lot of people make the mistake of putting way too much weight at the front or worse, too much weight at the back. And look, a towing course, they will teach you that sort of stuff, absolutely. But again, and this is, I guess, a frustration with a lot of people. Common sense would tell you put the heavy stuff over the axles, don't put too much stuff at the front, and certainly don't put too much stuff at the back. But common sense isn't all that common anymore.
No, it's not. But also, you know, if you've never done it before, someone's got to give you that advice to begin with.
And look, I mean, again, you know, look, again, writing it, you know, for the magazines, my editor Max is always, you know, we're always talking about what, you know, what we're going to talk about, what we're going to write about, and honestly, this issue of weight loading, you know, understanding, you know, the weight ratings of vehicles and your caravan and everything else, and not exceeding them, we kind of do hammer on it quite a lot.
Yeah, I can believe it.
You know, because it's just a topic that comes up all the time, and I think, look, again, people, if they're not going to do the course. I mean, just go out there. Some of these magazines are free, for heaven's sakes. You know, I mean, why wouldn't you just get on there and have a look around and just see what's available and have a read of some of these things? Because the information is there.
You've got to just have a bit of a hunt for it. Tony on the line from Nelson Bay. Tony, welcome to Nightlife.
How are you?
What did you want to say?
Well, I have trouble with weights, as I was just speaking about.
Oh, yes.
The weights of the tier weights, mass vehicle weights, GVMs. I've driven trucks most of my life. I have a multi-combination license. Mm-hmm. I don't have any trouble with axle weights with trucks up to 70 or 80 ton. I've got a 23-foot van and a vehicle on it. Tow ball weight, gross vehicle weight, gross. Look, there's probably six or seven combinations of how it should be weighed.
Yeah.
And there's really no. I see a lot of caravans getting around, and the you know, there's, it's too front heavy, or the tow vehicle's weighed right down. And
I think that was what Peter was just saying. Yeah.
It's just a nightmare, and there's nothing simple about it, really. At the end of the day,
you know what? Let me tell you something. It is actually simple, and if you read the right information and you get the right advice, it is actually not as difficult as what it sounds like. And I think this is the problem. A lot of people get confused between what I call the GVM of the vehicle and the gross combined, you know, limits of the vehicles combined. Now, my advice to people is treat them separately, right? Don't get confused with them. Don't think one affects the other and all this sort of thing. Treat GVM and GCM as separate issues and work out your weights separately. And that's that will actually simplify the situation a hell of a lot more for you.
Does that make sense, Tony?
Fair enough.
Yeah? Does that make sense?
No.
No.
Well, all I can tell you, very good articles have been written about this that explain it. And look, it's not going to make a lot of sense me saying it in words on the radio. But when you look at it, how the formulas are worked out and how the two are separated, trust me, it will be a lot clearer for you.
So, a couple of more texts coming in. Ian in Hobart saying, Marty, what would be the estimated costs to live on the road per week?
That's a really good question. And it's going to be different for everybody because some people do things differently. But I would tell people bank on $1,000 a week.
$1,000 a week
yes,
to live on the road.
For a couple.
Yep.
Now, that was what we sort of lived on, my wife and I, and three dogs. Right?
There we go.
You know, so that was approximately what it cost us. Now, of course, you can lessen it by doing more free camping, perhaps, you know, catching some of your food, you know,
if you
can
do. You're a good fisher.
Oh, no, I catch more colds than fish. but, yeah, look, you know, you can make life a lot cheaper for yourself. Don't stay in caravan parks as often, you know, all this sort of stuff. But I would say to people, look, you're going to need about $1,000 a week. Start there and then work your way, you know, backwards or forwards sort of thing. And the other thing I tell people to do, and this is something that my wife came up with, is budgeting is crucially important.
Yeah, okay. And stick to it.
And stick to your budget.
Yeah, all right.
Like for argument's sake, my wife, what she would do is she would say have five envelopes and would have fuel, accommodation, groceries, ancillaries, all that sort of stuff. And we'd put money aside each week in those envelopes, and that was as much as we would spend for that week for that item. If you went over, you know, well, you just tried not to do that. But if you'd save stuff, then that could go into the kitty for the next week.
Right, okay. But, yeah, so the envelope system really worked for you. Yep. Break it down. Here's what it's going to work out at. Because it would be very easy to go over budget.
And look, I mean, we did everything in cash. Now, I know cash is a bit of a dirty word, you know, at the moment. A lot of people don't take cash and all that sort of stuff. But I think you'll actually find, again, that travelling community, that travelling area, they cater for cash. You're never not going to be able to use cash.
So just back to when you were talking about your coffee machine before, someone's got in touch and said, for me, on the road, it's my bread machine. I love that that's what you can't live without.
Yep.
You were saying it's going to be different for everyone.
Yep.
But I think this one might resonate with you. Peter in the Margaret River saying one of the main dangers with caravans and buses seems to be overtaking. Comfortably cruising at about 80 or 90 kilometres per hour is what we enjoy.
Yep.
However, we've got impatient drivers wanting to do 110 kilometre per hour overtake in ridiculous situations.
Mm-hmm.
Peter saying, I've done 10 years in a coaster bus, and this is a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep, no, I don't disagree at all. Again, it's both sides of the fence. I've seen, you know, people with caravans. Again, look, a lot. I don't want to sound like I'm pointing the finger at anybody, but a lot of, like, you know, the grey nomads are very, you know, docile, and a lot of people whinge about them going too slow. But you've got a lot of, you know, sort of younger families and everything else, very cashed up, buying big American pickup trucks and everything else, and they do seem to be able to drive and at a lot faster speeds than what a lot of people ever do. Look, again, it's like truck drivers. You know, you've got good and you've got bad. Car drivers, you've got good and you've got bad, and it's the same with caravanners. Some of them are good and some of them are bad. And look, education is probably the only thing that's really gonna start solving these issues.
Education and a bit of communication, Marty. You've been great for this hour. I cannot thank you enough for coming in and having a chat with us.
No, that's all right, Nick. No worries. It's been a pleasure.
It's been an absolute blast. That was Marty Ledwich. He runs the Caravan and Camping Australia Facebook page. There are, I think, roughly 250,000 members. Absolutely wild. Talking all things caravanning with me. And thanks to people who are in there sharing their own tips and tricks, but also a couple of big questions there. And I know it'll turn into a bit of a conversation about how polite we are to each other on the roads as well, which is always a really big one on that one.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.